listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grand County and surrounding area. I'm Candace Burke, your weekly host. Joining me today is Rachel Sierra. Rachel is the executive director of El Refugio. Welcome back to Community Spotlight, Rachel.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad to be here. I'm glad you're here. Now, talk to us all about the history and vision of El Refugio, and then from there, I'll ask you more about updates, you know, both presently and the future. So take it away.
So I know in 1983 is when El Refugio was created, developed, got a board of directors. We didn't have shelter, but there was counseling services. So later on, the Watts Hall, the basement, got some volunteers, and they were able to take victims there. And Mr. Ron Hall, I think a lot of people know him. He was our magistrate judge for many years. But at that time, he was a sheriff, and he used to respond to domestic violence calls, and he would take some of the victims home because there wasn't a place to shelter them. So he was a big advocate for El Refugio, always has been. He was an advocate as he was a judge. He just was active, believes in justice, and he was very neutral with men and women that were victims of domestic violence. Our heart goes out to him.
There's nothing short of remarkable that he would take the victims into his own home.
Yes, he did. And it was very frustrating. I think he got frustrated like the rest of us when victims come and they're seeking help and then they go back. But it takes a while to understand those dynamics and the cycle of violence that happens.
How often is it that a victim will go back to the batterer in your experience and what you know?
Well, nationwide, I think the stats were always like 7 times at least. But I think that has increased like to 9 or 10 times. And I mean, they go back. And I mean, sometimes we don't see them again, you know, not in 7 years or 9 years. I always wonder how they're doing. You might see them because we're so small. You might see them in town, still with their partner, but they're still alive. So that gives us some kind of relief.
It must. And like you said in an earlier show, I mean, this violence, it stretches over all socioeconomic, cultural, ethnic areas, that there is just everyone, every family probably has been affected by this one way or another.
Definitely. It does. It is not choosy.
It's not choosy or picky.
It just happens. And I always say, like when we do events, like to anyone or presentations, it will come around if it hasn't. We all have family members. We have grandkids. We have sons, daughters, aunts, uncles, mothers, fathers. We don't want this to happen to them. And if it does, we need to be educated on knowing how to intervene and try to prevent it, and at least educate them on information where they can go.
And Rachel, if you can educate our listeners about what this violence incorporates, because there's so many ways of the victim being abused on every level, physical, emotional. What can you share with our listeners?
Well, I think sometimes even when we have women or men that are calling, they're not sure if they fall into that category because they haven't been physically abused. And domestic violence goes a lot further than physically abuse. Like you mentioned, emotional, mental, spiritually, financial. Sometimes they cannot have a cent to their name. So there's no way of them getting out. Some don't have cell phones. Economic. There's so many factors. Sexually, the abuse is just, and it seems like you think you've heard it all, and then you get someone that comes in that you know falls into abuse, but you haven't heard it yet, because the minds of abusers get very creative.
And And control plays a, such a big part.
In control. A lot of people power. Think, they say, well, he just has anger. No, it's control. I can tell you, I've sat in a courtroom with restraining orders or criminal hearings, and I guarantee you that that offender is not acting up with a judge or with anybody else. They have really good manners. They're polite. So that they choose where they're going to control and how they're going to control. And it's usually under their roof or behind closed doors.
Are most of the, most of the persons you advocate for when they call, are they still, would you say the majority are still women for the most part that reach out to you?
Or? Yes. I mean, we have men, we've had men in the shelter. Last year, we had probably 3 that were victims. Of course, the number is always great on the women, and either because men are embarrassed or they have a means of moving forward. But the numbers are very low. We might get more men applying for restraining orders. And I'm not going to say more men than women, but in comparison to shelter.
I see what you're saying. And it's my understanding globally, women are, quote, overwhelmingly the ones being victimized.
Yes.
So what would be some ways that men or women in the community find out about you? What would you say is the best way they can reach out to you when they need help?
It's calling our number, 575-538-2125. We have a 24-hour crisis line. If they are connected to another agency in the community, they all have our information. They can call 911 or they can call dispatch to get our information. Law officers are very good at bringing women or men to the door. We are on our website. We have Facebook. Just call us. You can call us. And there's someone here that'll answer the phone 24/7. And if you don't have a ride, we can arrange it.
Now, that's really wonderful. And is it my understanding that once they are admitted into the shelter, that they could stay up to 90 days with a 30-day review? Is that still in place? Or?
Well, now they can stay up here to 90 days. We do a case review every month, but women and men are staying longer. So we're not really restricting that. And because it's very hard to find rentals that are affordable.
Very hard.
Very hard. It is almost impossible sometimes. So what you find, they're asking for a lot of money for, and you're not getting something of good quality.
So Rachel, they could extend their stay with you for
yes,
a while longer.
Definitely. We've had women here for 6, 7, 8 months.
That's a long time.
Yes.
And of course, you house the children and family, extended families.
Yes.
And there's so many services you offer. You know, is, for example, the case management, counseling, if there's an order of protection, you're their advocate. There's so much you do. Share with us more about that.
Yes. So we have the emergency shelter number one, where they can stay longer than 90 days. And when they're in shelter, they receive intensive case management. The children, we have a children's coordinator, and they work with the children in the shelter, because they usually fall through the gaps. So they do a lot of activities that have to do with their developmental delays, connecting back with the mom, because the mom has been so worried about protecting herself, right, and the kids, that sometimes there's a disconnect. Getting them ready for school, linking them to school, taking them to the school, attending meetings, and housing is another thing. They help them with housing, with budget, with savings. So they get a lot of skills while they're there. And while they're in shelter, they connect them to our adult therapist, and the children are connected to our play therapist. And if they need a restraining order, they're connected to our victim advocates. And some of the women that are in the shelter that have been here like 3 or 4 months, we have a program, Rapid Rehousing, that pays for rent for 2 years for them. They're also connected to the Rapid Rehousing Program. So they're able to transition. And we also have an offender group. We're certified through New Mexico to provide groups to offenders, women and men, in Silver City, here in Grand County, and in Hidalgo.
How does that work for the offenders? Have you seen some really good results with the offenders coming into this program?
Yes. Mario Ogas, who is our facilitator, has the success rate for the offenders, and the numbers have been really good. Statewide, they're not, but it's needed. It's a program that's needed for accountability. But we have had some really good success rates. And not that we don't have repeat offenders, because we do, both with the men and women.
Like, what would be some areas where the offenders still struggle with? I know control is so central to this, but what are some of the other variables that you've observed that might have them reoffend?
I would say that sometimes some of the participants are there because they're court ordered. They don't want to end up in jail if they don't show up. But the ones I think that repeat are probably the ones that their control and some of their issues go a lot deeper and have not been engaged in the class.
Now, Rachel, what are some upcoming events that will help support La Refugio? What are some things
In May, we have Give Grandly. We always look forward to Give Grandly. And we're really looking forward to this year, because we had statewide our Victim Crime Reparation Act, which is our VOCA grant, was decreased statewide. So we got a decrease of like maybe 14%. We're looking at a decrease in, for sure, in FY25, 50% cut of what we got decreased already. So donors and donations are going to be so important, because the services we offer here, they don't offer anywhere else, not in our local area, unless you want to go to Deming, and people aren't going to go to Deming, right?
Yeah.
But the services are needed, and whatever you can give, spread the word about Give Grandly, spread the word about what we do. We've been here, we're a reputable agency, and we need your help.
Well, that's good to get the word out. So listeners, pay heed to what Rachel's saying. Do what you can to support this needed organization through Give Grandly. How can our listeners make contact with you if they want to start donating, or even volunteer, or for that matter, know how to reach you in case of an emergency?
Yeah, our address is 800 South Robert Street. They can always walk in, or they can call us again at 575-538-2125. And usually the one that answers the phone right away is, her name is Charlene. She's my administrative assistant, and she will guide them wherever they're needing to go, or whatever it is that they need. She is very helpful. She knows all the programs. She knows what to do if they want to volunteer, if they want to donate. She's a resource for them. They can come by and they can call.
That's really, really good to know. And, with the labor intensive work that you do, Rachel, how do you decompress? Because you're so dedicated. You've been doing this for a long time. And this is, we talked about before the recording, it's your career and avocation. So what do you do to unwind and decompress?
I have my family. Remember, I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And I lean a lot towards that, especially when it's been a very stressful day, or when there's decisions that need to be made that sometimes I don't want to make them. I depend on that. I depend on my faith and on my family. I have my family. I have my, I only have one daughter here. The rest are in Phoenix, but I have three granddaughters here, and I have a great granddaughter that
no
I spend
way.
A lot
I
of time with.
I can't believe you're a great-grandparents. Not possible.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be 69 this March already.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, that's a scary number. But Yeah, that keeps me going. And I have a great grandson in Arizona, so that I'll get to see him February again. So I'm looking forward to that. And that is what fulfills me. Yeah. That evens it out for me. And I have a very loving husband and supportive husband.
Oh, you're very fortunate to have, you know, the love and support of your family.
Thank you. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't have been able to do it without their support.
So what are some other challenges with the work you do? What would you like to see, you know, happen for El Refugio that would garner more support?
I think that what I would like to see is, and I would like to see the community. We have a lot of really generous community members, but I would really like to see community businesses invest in this local domestic violence agency on a yearly basis, because that would really help our cash flow, our operations, that will help us continue these victim services, because funding is never a guarantee. And we got a lot of money during COVID, but that's gone, you know, and now funds are being decreased here and there and here and there. And it's like, what are we going to do now? So this is where we really need to reach out to the community, community businesses, and community members, Grand County commissioners, because this has been in existence for a long time and we need it. There's no question about it. They need it because they have family, and their family, one time they may need it, or they may have been here already several times.
What's your average caseload? If there's an average caseload, how many clients do you typically serve in the shelter?
It all depends, because like we have 8 bedrooms. Like since October, I would say maybe September, October, it was full. And when I say full, I can tell you we had 15 kids all the way up through December. So that was like either 8 mothers that we can have, because they're the parent, right? The head of household. And 15 kids, it's a lot of people back there. It's a lot of people with a lot of needs, with a lot of needs. And I tell you, this Christmas, the community was very generous. They were very generous. They had a wonderful Christmas. Aww. And even some of our former clients were able to be also helped with Christmas and got wonderful gifts from the community.
That's really quite wonderful. There's a lot of generosity.
There is.
Any other needs you see that might be pressing in the near future you want everyone to know about?
I would say the same thing is just please get invested, get engaged, become our partners. Not only I'm going to attend your event or whatever, but we need cash donations. And because this is what's going to keep this going. I mean, we're looking at the victim advocacy department being cut in half. Mm. You know, in FY25, right now we're hanging on, but there's a lot of people that need that case management, need people to go with them to court, to fill out petitions. It's a very needed service.
What's the courtroom experience typically like for your clients and of course, the advocates? What's a typical, if there's a typical,
because well, I think if it's someone it's the first time for them, it's very scary. It's very scary and it's very intimidating. And they know they have to go to court and see the respondent, the person that they put the order against.
Their perpetrator.
Yes. And it's scary talking to the judge. That can be very intimidating.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So our victim advocates prepare them before court, prepare them on how to answer to the judge, of course. When to talk, when not to talk. They go over their case and remind them of the things that are important for them to mention to the judge while they're in court. And after the court hearing, lots of times they've been so nervous that they probably missed a lot of stuff that the judge said. But the advocates just go over everything that happened, what the judge asked them to do, what they need to do. And that is very helpful, because someone going up there by themselves, they're going to miss so much. And it's not like they can just go back in there and ask. That's not the way it works.
Rachel, how long does a case management last for the client? Or is there, maybe there's no real end to that as long as there's a need, I'm guessing, right?
As long as there's a need, yes. Because they, even when they transition out of here, they're still our clients. And 6 months can pass and something happens. Or they have a need or need some kind of resource they haven't been able to find. The advocates are here to help them and to guide them.
What else would you like our listeners to know?
Well, I think I would like them, first of all, to say thank you to the ones that have been so generous with El Refugio, because their hearts are in the right place. They're bringing hope to all the victims that live in this community. And hope is what they need. When they know that other people that don't even know them care about their livelihood, it inspires them to make a change. So I would say thank you. Thank you doesn't come out enough, I don't think.
Is there anything else you would like to share as we wrap up today's show?
I would like to say thank you to our staff, because our staff is, whether you're in the front with my being the administrative assistant, to the facilitator, the offenders, the advocates in the back, the advocates for the victims, our counselors that work with the children and the moms, they are awesome. And they give because they want to give. And they provide and they go beyond. The compassion that they hold is, I don't even have a word to express it. They are one of a kind. They're unique. And we're blessed to have them.
It sounds like you have a very dedicated staff.
We do. We really do.
And do you see in the near future the need for more counselors and case managers?
I think that we are big enough and small enough to be able to carry the load. We don't, I don't see that this building could expand anywhere else, to the sides, up, or anywhere. But it seems to work out. Like, it really seems to work out. Like, if we have a waiting list maybe for counselors, it's like somehow one is finishing and then they can get the other person in. So it, I always call it divine. Just sort of just works.
Yes, it really does. Seems like it does. It is. I remember you saying the last time you were on how things seem to just work out.
Yes, and they continue to. So we're really, I think El Refugio is a treasure here in this, is a treasure here in this community.
It is. It truly, truly is.
Yes.
And again, volunteer opportunities. So you would recommend that if anyone's interested in volunteering?
Yes, we haven't had like a lot of people volunteer. And I think because of all the COVID and that still lingers on, it just, we don't really get a lot of requests to come and volunteer, but we do get a lot of people calling if we need anything, you know, so that sort of balances that out.
Rachel, I can't thank you enough for coming back on again. It's a joy having you here.
Well, thank you so much for reaching out.
And the very best of luck with Give Granly in May.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. It's also available online at gmcr.org. I'm Candace Burke, and you have been listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Thank you again for listening.